Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York State lawmakers ended their legislative session, but left a number of issues on the table. Final negotiations on several major issues were derailed after Governor Kathy Hochul made a surprise decision to halt a planned congestion pricing plan in Manhattan less than a month before it was scheduled to begin. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Governor Hochul, 2 days before the session was to end, reversed her position on congestion pricing. She said she no longer backed a plan that would charge private vehicles at least $15 each time they entered Manhattan south of 60th Street. The governor, who a month earlier touted congestion pricing during an international climate change summit in Europe, now said it would cost average New Yorkers too much money to commute.
Given these financial pressures, I cannot add another burden to working and middle-class New Yorkers or create another obstacle to our continued recovery.
The announcement was met with relief by some Democratic state lawmakers and congressional representatives who represent suburban swing districts in the Hudson Valley and on Long Island. And it appeared to address a concern that the implementation of congestion pricing could be weaponized by Republicans in several closely fought congressional races. In 2022, 4 House seats flipped in Blue New York to the GOP, helping give Republicans control of that chamber. But the governor alienated top Democrats in the legislature. They called it a political betrayal. Senate Finance Chair Liz Krueger spoke at a rally to protest the governor's decision.
She's got to reverse herself on this. This is a terrible decision.
Krueger openly invited people to bring lawsuits to try to reverse the decision. With just a couple of days left in the session, Hochul also asked the Senate and Assembly to fill a $1 billion hole in the Metropolitan Transportation Authority budget caused by the halt to congestion pricing. A mobile payroll tax on businesses was immediately rejected, and an alternative proposal to approve a loosely structured IOU to the MTA was discussed. As late as Friday afternoon, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie said options were still on the table.
You have to make a decision on raising revenue. So you either have to do that now, sometime between now and January, or January.
But the Senate adjourned Friday evening, and the Assembly finished its business after pulling an all-nighter early on Saturday without agreeing. The MTA, in a statement, warned that without a new funding source, some key improvement projects, including updating signals, making more stations accessible, and buying more electric buses, would be put on hold. Hochul's announcement also threw a wrench into attempts to reach agreement on a number of other issues. While 2 bills championed by the governor to regulate children's social media feeds quietly passed, several environmental and climate change-related ones did not make it to the finish line. They include the New York Heat Act. It would stop utilities from automatically charging ratepayers for new gas lines, an expanded bottle deposit law, and a measure to reduce plastic packaging. Liz Moran with Earth Justice spoke at an 11th-hour rally for the bills. She says lawmakers approved the Climate Change Protection Act in 2019. It has a goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 85% by 2050. But she says since then, Democrats who lead Albany have not been willing to take the steps needed to actually reach that aim. And she says the governor's decision to cancel congestion pricing, combined with the failure of the other bills to gain traction, is disturbing.
This is taking us backwards and where we need to be to meet our climate law mandates and protect people and save them money.
A bill to require big oil and other energy companies to pay for climate change mitigation was approved, but it faces an uncertain future on Hochul's desk. Hochul, as well as leaders of the legislature, say that this might not be the end of their meetings in 2024. They say they may need to return before the end of the year to address the funding crisis caused by Hochul's decision. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week I sat down with Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, to talk about the end of session. We began with the last-minute suspension of congestion pricing.
Governor Kathy Hochul cited, you know, opposition to it. It's not popular. You know, said that the working class New Yorkers who drive in or businesses who deliver, you know, goods and services through the city can't afford it. And those aren't the rich guys that would be paying this. And so it would be a bigger hit than folks expected. But I think all in all, I mean, if you take out that if it weren't a congressional election year, a presidential election year, you'd have to ask, well, would they have put it off at this time? Because this had been in the planning for a long time. And it was enacted by the state legislature 5 years ago. It took a lot of planning, some coordination with the federal government on various aspects. And then it was ready to go on June 30th. And just weeks before, Kathy Hochul had been touting congestion pricing, which we should say is basically a higher toll for driving into the busiest parts of Manhattan during the busiest parts of the day, up to $15. So it's a big hit on a toll if you're driving into the Manhattan.
And Yancey, the governor, was even in Rome with the Pope talking about the environment shortly before she reversed course.
Right. It had multiple benefits, according to the backers. One is less cars, meaning less pollution in New York, but also less gridlock, more use of mass transit. And let's not forget congestion pricing expected to generate billions over the years to help fund the mass transit system downstate, whether it's to buy new subway cars, repair stations, or whatever. It was supposed to be a recovering sense of revenue so that the transit system and the folks who run it could do a lot of capital planning to fix things.
Yeah, yet the other fixes to that, for example, bailing out the transportation agency through a proposal to increase the payroll mobility tax or to siphon money from the state's general fund, that certainly didn't go through in negotiations.
Yeah, in part because it was so late. You know, the payroll tax would have hit just New York City businesses. The proposal was floated that way because raising the payroll tax in the suburbs would definitely cost people their legislative seats because it has in the past. But, you know, Governor Hochul basically gave, 48 hours for folks to consider this. And, you know, whether it was a combination of people angry because they didn't want to end congestion pricing, or angry because they didn't want to do the payroll tax, or angry because, hey, this is just 48 hours to figure out a huge issue. Governor Hochul's proposal just went nowhere. One of the other things that got floated, by the way, was, well, she could tap into the reserves. I mean, Hochul has built up the rainy day fund. It's up around $20 billion, which is nice and healthy, way better than it used to be. And folks would say, well, what are reserves for other than just sitting in the bank? They're supposed to be when we're needed. Why don't you take out some reserves at least for 1 year to get keep the MTA capital program going, and then we'll address things next year. But all of it's on hold now.
Yeah, and I want to just, because I left something out when it came to the congestion pricing plan, we're now probably going to see some lawsuits, right? I mean, Senator Kruger, Liz Kruger, Democrat from the east side of Manhattan, she was almost apoplectic about this. She was angry at the governor, and she was encouraging others to sue.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that might play out. Her point was that the legislature enacted this. It was a state statute that brought in congestion pricing, and that you can't just declare it stopped by a governor or whomever. You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of the legalities here, but, you know, generally speaking, the legislature will pass a statute and then some agency will be in charge of rolling it out and setting a start date. So unless there's a start date in the statute that, you know, the actual start date for congestion pricing or anything else is not necessarily set in stone. So I don't know how that will play out, whether if they would have legal grounds to sue now, or if, you know, a delayed start doesn't necessarily mean that anybody broke the law. But, you know, again, it's a threat that's out there. And like you said, she was basically encouraging. Also, we should note that late Friday night, and I mean like late, 10, 11 o'clock or so, the MTA leaders put out a statement basically doing two things. One, in so many words, they said that the pause on congestion and pricing is in effect. In other words, the board doesn't have to take a vote to pause it. It's paused. And at the same time, that MTA saying we might now have to reevaluate, since we don't have authority to sign contracts or do any kind of long-term deal, you know, do we have to put big projects on hold. We've got a whole list of things that we're supposed to do, station renovations, buy some new cars, some new diesel locomotives. We have to figure out which one of those we need to put on pause ourselves.
Yeah, and at least when it comes to the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, he claims that this last-minute kerfuffle over congestion pricing eliminated some of the other negotiations on some of the environmental legislation, for example. So you've got the Repackaging and Reduction Act, and you've got the New York Heat Act, both which many lawmakers were keen on and thought would be able to make it through the negotiations, did not.
Yeah, and, you know, two things there. I mean, he's definitely right that they had to sidetrack and have what's in the halls of Albany called conferences. Basically, this is closed-door meetings of the majority party, which in New York is the Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate. They had to have long, lengthy conferences about what to do about the MTA or not do. And that does take up time. And besides these high, high profile bills, there's lots of, you know, very important little bills, hundreds of them that they have to get through in the last week. Things like renewing a county's authorization for red light cameras or, you know, passing legislation that's needed to convert a parkland into some other use that a local town might want. There's a lot of bills to get through. Now, so he's right in that it takes up time. But the flip side of that is, you know, the legislature can leave whenever it wants to. The legislators could stay an extra day, extra 2 days or whatever. At some point, you have to make a call about whether you want to continue the talks or whether it's just not worth it at this point and go ahead and adjourn.
That's Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A number of communities upstate have been dealing with PFAS contamination. The so-called forever chemicals have been linked to cancer. This week, we bring you the story of the Columbia County village of Alachua, which is hoping to receive federal money to address PFAS contamination in its drinking water supply. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Under state law beginning in 2021, New York municipalities began testing their water systems for PFAS compounds PFOA and PFOS, chemicals that have been linked to several ill health effects, including forms of cancer. In October of that year, Alachua recorded a PFOS concentration of 14 parts per trillion in one of its four drinking water wells. The detection exceeded New York's threshold of 10 parts per trillion and was taken offline. Frank Bevins is the village mayor.
The village of Alachua, myself, our village board and everything, you know, we took this very seriously, and we got on to it immediately, you know what I mean, which I think is a big help for us at this point, you know.
Alachua has already been approved for more than $2.7 million from the state to address the contamination. Now, Congressman Mark Molinaro, a Republican from the 19th District, is pushing for $2.2 million in federal funding to help install a permanent filtration system on the water supply. Mayor Bevins welcomes the congressman's involvement.
I mean, it's huge for the village of Alachua. You know, we're a very small village, and, you know, 2.2 is huge for us. I mean, and what you've been able to get from the state, you take those, you know, at the end of the day, I would say, we're getting roughly $5 million that we're not paying for. You know what I mean? We're not going to have to bond that or whatever, you know.
For his part, Molinaro said in a statement, quote, "These funds will advance our local communities and address dire needs. I'm fighting for this crucial funding to better our infrastructure, improve access to clean drinking water, and revamp our towns and villages," end quote. Prior to New York adopting a threshold of 10 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency maintained a health advisory of 70 parts per trillion. In April, EPA adopted new maximum contaminant levels for six PFAS compounds, including 4 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS, two of the most commonly detected chemicals. Rob Hayes, director of clean water at Environmental Advocates NY, says hundreds of New York communities are expected to take action when the new MCLs go into effect.
The State Department of Health estimates that about 300 communities across the state will exceed EPA's drinking water standards. That's millions of New Yorkers that are currently exposed to harmful levels of PFAS in their drinking water and that will benefit when these stronger standards go into effect.
The EPA's new PFAS standards, which the agency says will benefit 100 million people, will go into effect in 2029. The standards face industry opposition. The Biden administration says $1 billion in federal funding through the bipartisan infrastructure law will help municipalities test for and treat PFAS contamination. With clean water funding also available from the state and municipalities already testing for PFAS, Hayes hopes the Empire State will adopt the lower thresholds earlier.
We are urging Governor Hochul and the State Department of Health to enact these protections on a faster time frame here in New York. We've been ahead of the ball in New York on PFAS. Water utilities have tested for these chemicals already for years. New Yorkers shouldn't have to wait that long to get cleaner water.
The State Health Department says it is, quote, currently reviewing the details of EPA's rulemaking to determine how it will affect New York State's current MCLs, notifications, and testing as we look to harmonize the state and federal requirements, end quote. In April, the Columbia County town of New Lebanon received $2 million in the state budget to cap a landfill linked to PFAS contamination.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The suspension of service on Amtrak's Adirondack Rail line between Saratoga Springs and Montreal has been extended into September, which is irking regional tourism and transportation officials. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
Amtrak and Canadian National announced in May that the Adirondack train service would shut down for 6 weeks for track maintenance. But passengers began reporting to the Empire State Passengers Association that tickets they had booked later in the summer had been canceled. A statement from Amtrak states that it, quote, will be extending the modification of Adirondack service between New York City and Saratoga Springs through Sunday, September 8, as CN continues to progress track work on their line in Canada. We apologize to our customers for any inconvenience, unquote. Passengers Association Executive Director Steve Strauss notes this is the second summer in a row the New York City to Montreal route has been disrupted following a three-year closure during the pandemic. Strauss says Amtrak and CN have misled and disrespected customers.
People in the North Country are really getting screwed, and it's hard to get a real handle on what's going on. They made the claim that they were prepared to do this work this summer, and Canadian National had to move some things around to do this work this summer. We appreciate that they had indicated they were going to do that, but now it looks like maybe they're backtracking on that, or they're taking longer than they wanted to admit to get the work done. For whatever reason, it's not happening, and it's unfortunate that a dispute over 40 miles of track is interrupting international travel.
North Country Chamber of Commerce officials say Amtrak failed to communicate with any stakeholders about the decision to extend the rail line closure. President and CEO Gary Douglas calls the situation ludicrous.
They referred to it as an extension of the modification. Now, you want to talk about wordsmithing. They didn't use the words "a further suspension of the service," so they're being very coy and playing a terrible game in terms of their relationship and their responsibilities. We'll get by the closure, and hopefully now, finally, we're seeing the end of the tunnel in terms of when they will complete the work that they said they could do in 6 weeks, only then to somehow mysteriously discover it was going to take 3 months. Some accountability is needed here about really the mismanagement and malfeasance by Amtrak.
115th District Democrat D. Billy Jones, who chairs the State Assembly's Task Force on New York-Canada Relations, finds the situation frustrating.
We can't keep going through this every summer. And I thought we had come to a resolution on that with the announcement last week that they were going to do these track upgrades and that was going to satisfy everyone. And Amtrak seemed to be on board and CN seemed to be on board. Finally, and now we hear this. So looking for answers.
Douglas says ridership numbers along the route had been growing pre-pandemic and surged when the route reopened last summer. He says the loss of summer travel will not be cataclysmic, but the manner in which the shutdown has been handled is concerning.
When you keep interrupting things and getting people interested, only to find they can't book tickets because the service is down, and you do that again and again and again, you're going to discourage people. And then what's of added frustration is they're not communicating with anybody at all, zero, nil, nada. And that's troubling going forward.
New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has written to the leaders of Amtrak and Canadian National, telling them, quote, "The continued delays in service and lack of transparency from Amtrak and CN for our upstate New York and North Country communities is completely unacceptable," unquote. The Republican from the 21st District is demanding, quote, "greater transparency into the rationale behind continued delays of service," unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The King and Queen of the Netherlands visited Albany this week. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
King Willem-Alexander and Queen Maxima stopped by the governor's mansion Wednesday morning before heading to Tech Hub New York Creates, where they toured the facility, including an ASML company clean room, where semiconductor chips are made. Dutch Minister for Foreign Trade and Development Cooperation, Liesje Schreinemacher, and Governor Kathy Hochul signed a memorandum of understanding to advance shared goals for the future of semiconductor manufacturing. The Democrat says the agreement includes measures to maximize power and water efficiency and support the development of new materials.
Our state and the Netherlands can really power the future and create a semiconductor renaissance that the rest of the world will follow. And in so doing, the governments must also incentivize innovation and aggressively pursue companies working at the vanguard of the semiconductor industry. That's exactly what we did not long ago here in the state of New York. That is the genius behind our $10 billion Green Chips Initiative that we enacted with our state legislature. That is the program that, coupled with federal resources under the leadership of President Biden and Majority Leader Schumer, we're able to harness their resources with our $10 billion to be a magnet for companies from all over. And as a result, we landed Micron, the largest economic development deal in American history, just a short time ago. That's 50,000 jobs and many, many more opportunities coming right here to our beloved state.
Hochul says New York became what it is because of the Dutch.
It all started 400 years ago when someone with tremendous courage and a willingness to go into the unknown and chart new waters to come up what was now called the Hudson River, and to make New York State the powerhouse that it is.
Schreinemacher hailed the U.S. and the Netherlands as global leaders when it comes to semiconductors and integrated photonics development.
So we need to keep working hard to stay ahead and to enhance investment in more reliant supply chains that will decrease our vulnerabilities and give us more independence from third countries. We have the world's best companies, the smartest engineers, and the brightest researchers. But we also need a cohesive network of people working together to make the most of their talents. That's why I'm delighted that New York State and the Netherlands are now taking their partnership to the next level.
King Willem-Alexander highlighted the strong bilateral ties between the Dutch and the U.S. going back centuries. He says New York Creates exemplifies putting together the brightest people, the best facilities, and the boldest ideas.
In the Netherlands, you can see the same dynamic spirit, driven by the same connections between big business, startups, and research institutions. Those connections are our greatest strength. So it is fantastic to see our leading centers of nanotechnology and semiconductors working to enhance their ties even further. The United States and the Netherlands are a perfect match. They've been here for years. Not everybody realized this, but our country is the second largest foreign investor in the US. And here in New York State alone, our trade and investment relations account for 57,000 jobs. But our relationship is about much more than the economy. We're also partners in the search for solutions to the great challenges of our time, from climate change to the energy transition to affordable health care for all.
Hochul also announced the sponsorship of 5 SUNY students who are attending a semiconductor summer school program in the Netherlands this summer. The King and Queen, accompanied by Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, later visited Schuyler Mansion, where they discussed climate change with young people. The Royals' day in Albany concluded with a networking event at the Governor's Mansion. They were also scheduled to visit New York City before heading home to the Netherlands.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2424. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.